This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
T.O. Greyhawk.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Joe Keegan, and joined with me today is the entirely irredactable Amy Nelson and the utterly non-malevolent Justin Ozer. How are you both today? Amy?
I'm doing great. So glad to be here talking more next gen. Very excited.
Cool. I went with irredactable because I figured like nothing will ever erase you from existence.
Oh, well, thank you.
And Justin, how are you?
Good. I think I just learned a word. I don't think I'd heard irredactable before, but
I think I made it up. I Googled it and I couldn't find any reference to it. So it's now a word. It means to not be able to be redacted.
Okay. Well, that's different than being erased. But anyway, good to be here. And that you think I'm non-malevolent. I mean, we'll see as the episode goes on if that's true, ooh, depending on the topic we talk about. But
I can't wait to see Justin's dark side.
Yeah. I'm doing great because since the last time we recorded, there's a new short trek that's come out that I really loved. Sorry for those outside the US and Canada that you're not able to see it yet, but I loved it a lot. I've seen it four times so far.
Can't wait to see it myself because I am outside the US and Canada.
Joe definitely has not seen this in any way.
I have no idea wink. What you're talking about. But be sure to watch after the credits because there's a special little nugget in there.
I love that. So.
Well, I wish I had an excuse because I'm in the US and I still haven't seen it. Oops.
Yeah, you have no excuse, Amy. I think actually we should just take a pause for 14 minutes here, have you watch it, come back, and then we'll see what you think. Okay, we're back and Amy still hasn't seen it, so.
Oh!
I was ready to pause and put out a 14-minute space on the podcast.
Yeah.
And then we'd have to wait for the complaints to come in that something went horribly wrong.
Yes.
In any case, we have some iTunes reviews, which are stellar reviews, and Justin's going to read out our first one.
Yeah, so the first one comes from TrekFan41153.7 via Apple Podcasts in the US. By the way, I love that because 41153.7 is the star date at the beginning of Encounter at Farpoint. So nice reference there.
I was just looking that up there. I figured that it looks like a star date.
I have to admit, I looked at that and I was like, that looks like a real star date from an episode. I did look it up beforehand, but very nice. So that was on July 4th. The subject was All Good Things, an Earl Grey review, and they gave 5 stars. And here's what they said. From the moment I clicked on my first episode and listened to the hosts Justin and Amy, and now Joe, welcome to Earl Grey, by the way, I knew I loved this podcast. From Amy's love and fascination with her favorite characters, especially Troy, to Justin and his observations of the next-gen crew on screen and outside of canon, books, graphic novels, etc., this podcast lets me relive the nostalgia of the show, and it has always put a smile on my face ever since I discovered it. Star Trek The Next Generation has been a huge part of my entire life, and thanks to this podcast, it has given me more of those memories to look forward to, as well as given me hope that we will see a Star Trek future in real life one day. From the show to my own life, the podcast and the people behind it literally helped me be a part of the best of both worlds. I cannot thank them enough. If you're a huge Star Trek fan and a big Next Gen fan in particular, then this podcast is the one for you. May it bring you great joy and gratitude, and may you all live long and prosper. So thank you so much. We really appreciate that. I mean, always warms our hearts to hear these reviews and that you're enjoying the show so much. So thank you for that.
It's just lovely. It makes you feel warm and cozy inside, doesn't it?
I mean, I love podcasting with you guys. It's really fun, but it's like this extra layer that we have people who listen and they give us feedback and they love what we're talking about. It's very fulfilling. So please keep these coming.
It is. And you're so specific and, you know, sort of bring out our loves. And it's so good that what we have a passion for comes through on mic. And that's a joy. And so thank you.
And who knew Justin knew anything about the books, the novels?
Yeah.
Who knew?
It's a mystery.
I mean, lately, has there been an episode where I haven't mentioned a book connection?
No.
Not really.
I think that's my fault. I think I make you mention stuff about the novels.
It's fine. You can always have a segment where you're like, Justin, is there anything in the books about that? And I'll rack my brain.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
We have another review. This is from Lean D, and again on Apple Podcasts in the U.S. July 9th. And the subject, new fan, great podcast with 5 stars. And Lean writes, I've had this podcast bookmarked in my Star Trek podcast files for a long time now and finally gave it a listen. I really enjoy the pacing of these hosts. Lots of lively discussion that keeps my attention. I plan to continue listening to this fantastic crew. Happy to be aboard. Well, Lean, thank you so much for coming on board and finally giving us a shot. Thank you so much.
Can I just jump in? Is Lean D not the person that won the competition?
It is, who we haven't heard from yet.
Oh.
So she's probably still, or he or she's probably still to get to that episode.
That's quite possible.
Maybe.
If you're listening to this, you have until October 31st to let us know how to contact you, because we only have a name and an initial. But yeah, I mean, we really appreciate that. And also that it's something that you took a look at a while back and you're like, oh, I should listen to this when I have time. And you actually like bookmarked it, came back to it, and listen to it. And we're so glad that you enjoyed the podcast. And we love, our new fans and our existing fans alike. It's just, again, it's just so wonderful when we get these things. Every time we see a review, we just, it just warms our hearts. What else can I say?
It means we're going to have to keep on doing it because there's people that rely on us for their podcast nourishment.
I know, every week.
We have some Babel Conference feedback for Earl Grey 294, which was the one I wasn't here. It was a favourite non-human species with our amazing guest, Nicholas Paul Collinson. Kimberly Lawler says, I enjoyed this discussion. Some very interesting choices. I especially agreed with time travel. Oh, wait. Then there's a wee smiley face with sweat on it, which apparently is called smiley face with sweat. I had to Google it. Actually, the exocomps were the most interesting choice to me, partly because their entire episode centred on defining life and whether these could qualify. They did seem to have some personality. I'm glad you mentioned Bajorans and Cardassians at the end. I find Cardassians absolutely fascinating. Thanks especially to the novels by Andrew Robinson and Una McCormick and characters we saw in the show like Dukat and Garak. But I don't know that they're my favourite non-humans because there was such cruelty and paranoia in their culture and society. Maybe it's a little like the Soviet Union, interesting culture, people and history, but 100% wouldn't want to live there. The Bajorans seem much more appealing in many ways. Thanks for your feedback, Kimberly. I've always really thought the Cardassians were a bit like kind of old style Russia, like back in the time of the Tsars in the 18th and 19th century. That's a very good comment. The exocomps are a good choice. I will note that I've not listened to this episode yet, but I will do it this week. Exocomps seem like a good choice. I'm a fan of defining anything as being alive if it meets our definition.
Whatever that might be.
For life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a really good time with Nicholas Paul Collinson, and I really enjoyed all of our picks. And thank you, Kimberly, for bringing up time travel. Oh, wait. That's Justin's thinking outside the box again. That was funny comment.
I chose it for one episode. Okay.
I know. And you're never going to live it down.
Probably. Just like Joe is never going to live Jellicoe down. I'm going to make sure of it. But thank you, Kimberly, for your comment. I really appreciate everything you have to say here. And of course, as we were talking about a moment ago, you mentioned novels. So I should mention, I think the ones that Kimberly is referring to. So the Andrew Robinson novel, Andrew Robinson, who played Garrick, wrote a novel about Garrick called A Stitch in Time, which is absolutely incredible. It's his life story. So listeners, you should check that out. Just note that the paperback is very rare and it's going to be really expensive. So you should get the ebook for that. And then for Una McCormack, she's written a couple of novels. I think the ones maybe that I have in mind the most are The Neverending Sacrifice, which is a really, really incredible novel, and The Enigma Tales, which is a really great one as well, and is going to be read by at Trek Book Club on Twitter this month. So might as well plug that. But yeah, thanks so much, Kimberly. We really appreciate your comments here.
That's cool. My list of Justin's novel recommendations is ever increasing.
Yeah, I mean, do you have time to read novels or to listen to audiobooks? Because some of the more recent ones are on audiobooks and you have listened to those, right?
Some of the Discovery, the first three Discovery novels I've listened to so far. Like the first one, there was one I read that I stopped reading because I really didn't like the person that was reading it. It was just really dull.
This was an older one?
Was it the second Discovery book?
Drastic Measures?
I think it was. Was it narrated by a woman?
Maybe, because I think a lot of the more recent ones have been narrated by Robert Petkoff. And I've heard a lot of people say he's really good.
Yeah, because the first one was good, because like, I think that a book, especially an audiobook, is all down to the narrator. They kind of make it or break it. But this one, and I'm sure it was the second Discovery novel, and I had to stop because I drive to work and that's where I listen to my podcasts, and I really can't afford to fall asleep when I'm driving.
Wow, okay.
And die.
Interesting. Really oh, jeez. Well, sorry. This has been quite a little detour.
Indeed. So, Amy, you're next.
Yeah. All right. We have Johnson Lai, who writes, "Thanks for the great discussion. As you were talking about the binars, it occurred to me that them being genderless makes them non-binary. Thought it was an interesting juxtaposition." Well, Johnson, thank you so much. And I remember bringing that up, that they were genderless, but I didn't go that next step to say, oh yeah, that's non-binary and here they are binary. Great comment. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I totally hadn't thought about that, but it's a really great observation.
I suppose it's just a case of the term binary being used for something that's not gender identity or sexual orientation.
Well, usually for gender, it means like binary is a choice between like what is male and female, traditionally male and female, and non-binary is something other than that. Yeah. But
in terms of the binars, their binary aspect was to do with their communication and the fact they always went round in twos.
Yes. Okay.
Cool.
All right. So we have Simon DeLuca, hashtag still listening. And listeners, I know some of you are, but you should listen toward the end because we have fun bonus questions. So Simon says, "Amy, your question to Justin would make a great podcast. What are the three non-human aliens that each of you relate to the most?" So yeah, I think that was an expansion of what we were talking about. And I actually had a chance to see that and reply earlier today. I was thinking I most relate to Bajorans, Vulcans, and Ryzens, which is maybe a weird combination, but different aspects of me, maybe. I don't know. So
I think I'm going to have to go with Armis, Nigilum. And Khan, let's go with Khan.
Yeah.
Let's make Khan a species.
Yeah, because I think this hasn't come up for a while, but you like to do away with fictional characters and kill them.
Yes.
Is that what you're thinking?
The ones that annoy me, yeah. Sure. The more violent, the better. Why not? Let's go there. I'm a terrible human being.
Well, sure. In what you want to do fictionally, I'm glad in real life you are not like that. Are you?
Oh, no.
What don't we know about your life?
Sure. Yeah. Nothing.
Everything's fine.
Let's not talk about it here. It's not appropriate. Yeah. Okay.
I'm glad I'm at a distance.
You're thousands of miles away. Somewhere in El Paso, Texas.
That's right.
It wouldn't take long, Justin.
Oh, boy. Moving along.
Just across the pond.
Uh-huh. Okay, so we're going to get into our discussion, and this is part four of our Science in the Next Generation. And today, well, previously, we've talked about seasons 1 to 6, and I, as a science teacher, have highlighted all the cool science things that I've found in TNG episodes and what our current understanding of that science has told us. And today we're going to talk about season 7. In the first episode, we're going to talk about the episode interface. Why I've chosen that is because it features virtual reality. Amy, could you tell us the plot, please, of this episode?
Sure. We have LaForge uses a virtual reality probe to explore a wrecked ship inside a gas giant, but he's preoccupied by the disappearance of his mother's ship.
I like all the tech in this episode, but the whole, I never quite got the mother being lost bit and him seeing her. And
you don't understand why that's part of the episode? Or
I think I'd really have to watch it again. I'm sure it's quite obvious.
Well, so, I mean, what actually happens and ends up happening in the episode is there is this, I think, entity that is trapped in the gas giant and needs some help being brought to the surface. And the way it figures out to get attention is through this VR probe. And it's like, well, if he thinks his mother's there, he's going to do everything to rescue us.
Get it now, totally. I don't have to rewatch it. Excellent.
Well, and it's interesting because just like Future Imperfect, it's sort of a similar concept of an alien delving deep into someone's psyche to pull out something so that they will be recognized on a personal level. So here we have LaForge, you know, thinking about losing his mother. And so this alien takes advantage of the fact. So, but interesting that it shows up with this virtual reality probe. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I've always thought, I think the episode itself maybe has a few issues, but I've always found that really interesting that they developed this technology, I guess through his visor, they can send a probe and he can be kind of hooked in as if he's there with the probe. I think it's kind of funny toward the beginning when you see him walking by and there's a reflection and the reflection is the probe. So it's like, okay, yeah, I guess that's what the probe's actually seeing, but really, if it was virtual reality, wouldn't you want to do it so that it looks like him? But whatever. I always find that kind of funny. Like, he looks and he's like, oh, I look like a probe. But just the whole idea of VR, I mean, it's something that I can't say I've really experienced. And the idea of having some kind of immersive experience like that that requires you to, like, put on a headset or something, I think that something like the holodeck would be more attractive for me because you could just walk in and stuff's there and you can interact with it, whereas like putting on a headset and just kind of like looking into that. And I know there are ways that they have now where they can make it feel like, you know, you can move and they can make it feel like you're actually going through this area, but there's something about that that's always felt a little weird to me, that you're just kind of inside this headset.
Have you never tried any VR at all?
I'm going to say that I really haven't, that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. I have an HTC Vive, which is a VR headset, and it's hooked up to my PC.
And that's how you're podcasting right now, right?
Yeah, this isn't actually me. I'm out for dinner. So before you try it, you don't really know what to expect. Uh-huh. You see YouTube videos of people in VR, and you see their view of what they're doing. But what comes across is the power of your visual centers of your brain. When you first put on the VR headset, it feels like you're actually in this new location. It's completely immersive. And on the HTC Vive, there's kind of a landing space. And the one I've got is this kind of mountain house, I suppose. And there's views over the mountains, and you can hear the wind and you can hear the birds tweet and Twitter. But your brain kind of fools you into thinking that you're there, and you kind of almost imagine the mountain breeze wash over you. It's kind of really... it's kind of really weird. And then when you take it off, you go, that felt entirely real.
Okay.
You have to try it if you haven't.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. So the first time I did VR was last Christmas, and my nephew brought over his VR thing, and we played this game where you hit the music with a lightsaber, you hit the boxes, and they've got things coming over you. And so you have to duck and you're, you know, sliding left and right, so you don't hit these boxes that are coming at you. It was the craziest thing. And I absolutely loved it. I have video of it. Like you're saying, Justin, like it's just me on this thing and I'm, you know, bobbing and swaying and going up and down. It's the funniest thing to look, and you're like, what? But it felt so real. The second experience I've had is during STLV, like we had a little away mission with some friends and went to the Void, which has VR experiences. And I went and did the Star Wars one. And you have not only the VR headset and your earphones and stuff like that, but you wear a vest. And so when you get hit, it vibrates. And so you're like, oh, I got hit, you know, and stuff like that. And they have the whole thing, and you're walking through these rooms and you're, you know, trying to take cover. And so you are up and down. And you're trying to walk and you're like, I don't know where I'm going. And it's the coolest thing. Mm. I highly, highly recommend it.
So Joe, when you come to STLV next year, I mean, just bring it so I can try it. Because like here's the interesting thing about me, which is that when something new comes out, I often don't go ahead and get it or adopt it unless I see it as something that's necessary. So I can tell you probably I won't get something that's like a VR headset unless they start creating like Star Trek episodes that can be best experienced in that headset. Then I'd be like, okay, I am getting it just so I can see this episode that they made. And I know they're, you know, games and things like that, but if they made an episode like the first episode of season 2 of Picard, you can get in VR, I'd be like, I am getting that so I can experience it that way. I'm convinced by Star Trek stuff.
Well, I know Roddenberry has created a VR program that they launched at STLV. Did you have a chance to experience that?
I didn't.
That?
You know, funny,
yeah, me neither.
Funny story about that, Amy. At STLV last year, I was in the vendor's room, and I think, I'm trying to remember, maybe like Larry Nemechek was there with a couple other people, and Rod Roddenberry comes by, and he's like, hey guys, how's it going? We're like, oh, it's going great. How you doing? And he's like, you know, we have this VR thing. We'd love to, you know, take you and experience that. And we're like, oh, great. But then like the discussion kept going like among this circle of people, and eventually he wandered away. So I didn't get to experience it, unfortunately. But there was an offer there.
Personal invite from Rod Roddenberry, and just, oh, dear.
But there was a group of us, and I felt it would be weird if I like just went off myself. But I was like, oh, let's go. No, but they were having a great discussion, and eventually he wandered off.
Yeah, so. I was talking with Ken and Ray about it, and they were all, you know, hyping it up and stuff. So, but yeah, I never experienced it either.
There's a few Star Trek things in VR that you can get. What is the, is it Bob's Burgers? No, Dave and Buster.
Dave and Buster's, yeah.
They have their own Star Trek.
I know, like I said, if it's a game, I'll be like, eh. But seriously, if it was an episode, I would totally get exactly the equipment needed.
Well, what I think we need to do is do a Earl Grey away mission and go to the Void. It's at the Venetian, and experience VR together.
Okay, I think we should do that, but...
Why did we do the Star Trek one at Dave & Buster's?
Well, that's not you walking around. You're sitting in this, you know, four-seater...
Like simulator, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so, but with the... Well, and the one at the Void, they have like Ghostbusters, and they have Star Wars, and, you know, they're going to have some other ones by next year.
But they don't have a Star Trek one?
No. You know, Star Wars always gets the love.
So far, indeed. But they're starting to put more resources into Star Trek stuff. We'll see. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it sounds really cool. It's just one of those things where I don't tend to go out of my way to get something unless I feel it's necessary.
Why I wanted to mention VR.
Yes.
I know we've talked about the whole entertainment aspect of it, but there are some interesting medical uses of it. And I, while I've not experienced it from a medical point of view, I have experienced the effects that it's used for in medicine. So increasingly, I know the NHS, our National Health Service in Oxford, have been using it to treat people with phobias and PTSD by exposing them to the things that cause them fear in small amounts.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's been used extensively with people that have fears of heights and vertigo. And there's a thing on the HTC Vive called Richie's Plank Experience, where you, when you spawn into the game, you're standing on the sidewalk of a kind of typical American city. There's big skyscrapers, and you can see there's cars and buses, and there's a helicopter that flies over, and there's birds flying in the sky, and it looks kind of real. But behind you, there's a, let's call it an elevator, or for people outside the US, it's a lift.
I was going to say, you mean a turbo lift? I don't know what an elevator is.
I think it's got cables on it still. So it's an elevator. So you turn around and you walk into the lift and you press the button. And there's a number of options, but you press the button for the plank and you go up to, I don't know, the 100th floor or 100 stories up. And the door opens and there's a plank of wood in front of you. Mm-hmm. Out the side of the building. And there's nothing else, just this plank of wood. So you can, in terms of the fear of heights, your eyes convince you that you are going to die if you fall off the plank.
But you don't have and like a parachute and you're just like, yeah, let me just jump off this and do some base jumping or something. No.
No, you don't. You do not have anything like that.
Oh, wow.
If you walk on the plank and you see the plank in front of you, you can walk along it, turn around and come back in the lift. That's fine. If you fall off the plank, then you will accelerate towards the ground. And when you hit the ground, everything goes white and you hear angels singing.
Oh, my God.
Through VR. I put my mum and
dad
on it.
Let's do it again.
I've got used to it.
Yeah.
My mum went on it and she was in tears. She actually thought she was going to die. She held on to me. I think I've still got the finger marks in my arms. She was absolutely terrified. And that's how it overrides. You tell people. I took it into school once and I got punched in the chest by another teacher.
What?
Who was so terrified. And she fell off and she was screaming as she fell towards the ground. And when she landed on the ground, she kind of jumped and punched out and punched me in the chest.
Yeah, don't bring that she was, one.
Yeah, it's that even though you tell people, it's like, remember you are standing in my living room or my classroom and you're standing on a carpet and you know where you are. You keep telling your brain this, but your brain doesn't believe it because your eyes are sending your brain a completely different signal and it refuses to believe it. So I used to be, the point about the medical experience, I used to be kind of really scared of heights. If I was to go up to like the balcony looking over a shopping mall, I'd be like, whoa, I'd feel a bit kind of nervous and my legs would turn to jelly and I would naturally kind of go down and hold onto the banister, have the banister above my head in case I accidentally fell over the banister. And now I can walk up, look over and I'm fine. So I think it's desensitized me to having this fear of heights, which is kind of cool. But there was an article I read earlier in preparation for this podcast that says, will VR desensitize your sense of danger? So kind of overuse of VR and doing all these things that are overriding signals in your fear response in your brain, will it make you more likely to harm yourself by accident in real world? Especially if kind of VR gets so good in the next couple of years where it's indistinguishable from real life.
Well, that sort of goes back to the argument of when, you know, pretty violent video games came out and it's like, oh, it's going to desensitize an entire generation. And there hasn't been any strong research or evidence to prove that.
No,
so
no. It
may be just a suspicion or, you know, people hypothesizing, but I don't know how well that would come across.
So here's something interesting, getting back to the TNG episode interface. There's a point at which like a fire breaks out, I think like on the ship, and like LaForge feels it and like his skin blisters. So his body is reacting to what he's seeing. which I think is a really interesting aspect. I don't think anything we have in VR would do that, where you'd be like, oh my God, I'm in a fire, and you get like burned or something, but somehow like the information it's sending back to him, his body responds to it, or it makes his body hot or something. I've always thought that part was weird.
Well, I think that makes sense, because even like wearing VR now, like your heart rate is going to go up just
because but your skin's not going to burn, right?
I know, but you're going to have a physical reaction. And so that's just the next step, you know, and of what sci-fi does.
Yeah, Joe, that one where people are on like this tall building and there's a plank, I hope you have never tried to show that to somebody who has a heart condition. Because that would...
No, I always ask, and it's kind of, if you're using it with kids, you kind of have to do that kind of risk assessment thing and make sure they don't have any pacemakers. It's like using the Van de Graaff generator in physics, and it generate like thousands of volts of static electricity.
Oh, yeah,
if there's pupils with implanted devices that are keeping them alive, you don't really want them anywhere near it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want your students dying.
No.
That's a no-no.
Yeah.
That's like rule number one, like make sure your students don't die. So,
don't kill the students. Wow. Let's move on and talk about our next episode. And for this, I've chosen Force of Nature. Amy, what's this one about?
Well, we're investigating the disappearance of several ships. The Enterprise discovers two scientists who claim that warp drive is destructive to the fabric of subspace. So our wonderful speed limit episode.
So I think I've kind of looking at this kind of sidelong and thought this episode was kind of about climate change and global warming. It's kind of that kind of analogy that what we're doing is going to damage where we live.
I could see that. I mean, I think at the time, maybe it was just generally about any kind of ecological damage. But yeah, it could be.
So, but climate change is the big environmental kind of talking point.
I mean,
at the moment,
it is at the moment. I think because I was trying to remember back, because I remember in the early 90s, the big thing was the hole in the ozone layer, right? And people didn't talk much more about that than climate change, right?
True.
Yeah, but
I suppose they are kind of part of the same problem, aren't they?
Humans, they are the same.
Overproduction of carbon dioxide and use of chemicals that damage the ozone layer. So. But specifically, I wanted to talk about what happens when the Earth gets too warm. If we continue on this trajectory, then the Earth heats up, more places become uninhabitable, and all the ice melts and sea levels rise. So interestingly, I looked at what happens if all the sea ice melted back into the oceans. Never mind what that amount of fresh water does to the salinity of the oceans and how that affects biodiversity, but just how high do the seas come up. So if all the ice melts, sea levels rise by 70 meters, 70 meters.
Mm-hmm. Which is over 200 feet, right?
Yes. Oh, sorry, yeah.
I mean, for those in the
US. I live in 2019.
I live in 2019 too, but the US is one of those countries that still uses that imperial system. So,
one of the very few countries.
I know.
Like two of you.
To be exact, 229 feet. I mean, that's a lot, right?
It is. It's, wow. So I looked, what does that mean?
It means El Paso would still be dry, but anyway, but yeah.
I was going to mention that later, but El Paso's fine.
Yeah.
Las Vegas is fine. Completely. All of Florida is underwater. The entire state is submerged. Okay. Major cities in the US like Washington, D.C., which isn't in a state, interestingly, but Americans all know this.
Oh, there's a whole history there.
New York.
Yeah.
Houston, New Orleans, and Boston are entirely submerged. Both LA and San Francisco, being where they are on the coast of California, are hugely changed.
And Houston, I'm sure, would be underwater.
Yeah, mention that.
I mentioned Houston yet.
Yes, but tell us, what about your town in Scotland?
Okay, so I looked at the UK as well. The UK is basically fragmented into a series of big islands. Scotland... Well, the Highlands, if you go up, say, 40 miles, you start to get into high country and there's lots of mountains in Scotland. So in the central belt where I live, where you have Glasgow, which is the largest city of around about 1.4 million people in the greater Glasgow area, and Edinburgh, which is the capital, They're both mostly underwater, which would make my commute crazy long in terms of having to drive for a bit, then get a boat for a bit, then drive for a bit and get a boat for a bit.
I was going to say, Amy and I could still podcast from where we are, but you'd have to move up to the highlands from your boat. Oh my god. But yeah, like it's kind of a scary prospect, but like what would it take to actually melt all of the sea ice?
That's a good question. I'm not sure of the answer. Obviously, if we continue like heating up the atmosphere as we are doing and pumping out as much carbon dioxide, and some governments around the world are still promoting the use of coal and want to increase the use of coal, which isn't going to help. Certainly possible. We have to do something drastic, and it's not going to take governments or big corporations to do it. It's going to take individuals to make changes to their lives, which is going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that's what it's going to take. So another couple of points. I have thought about looking at the new maps of Scotland. If it gets to that point, then you could buy a property on the edge of the new coastline, and then when it happens, you'll have a lovely beachfront property.
Joe, you're channeling your inner Ferengi right now. You're like, lots of places would be underwater and people's lives would be displaced. Maybe a lot of people would die. But man, you could get some really interesting beachfront property.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
It means buying a house in the middle of a field in the middle of nowhere just now.
So that it'll be beachfront later. Yeah.
Yeah, the town of Ayr is completely underwater. My house is...
Yeah, I'd be okay where I wouldn't have to drive 4 hours to get to the ocean.
I did think about this. And while El Paso and Las Vegas are both above water, it's now unbearably hot to live in. So if you want to go outside, you have to wear a special environmental suit that's got built-in air conditioning.
Las Vegas can sometimes get unbearably hot.
That's my thoughts on sea level rise and climate change.
Yeah. So back to the episode itself, Force of Nature. I've always felt like I appreciate the point that they're making, but there's also, I don't know, there's something about it that I feel like maybe they could have executed in a different way, because initially I was confused by the episode because I thought that what they were saying was that there was something that was going on, that they lived in an area of space that was especially sensitive to this, and over the accumulation of many years, it was creating this rift, right? So I was thinking, that just means they can only go up to warp 5 in this corridor. But actually, I think as I rewatched it later and understood it more, what they're actually saying is they need to make those restrictions everywhere, because potentially this kind of thing could happen anywhere, right? Is that what it's saying?
I think that's what they meant. It's like, yes, this place was particularly sensitive, but it could happen to any region of space.
And for me, it always felt like it wasn't quite clear that that's what they were saying. And then they make, maybe a couple other references in season 7 and they kind of drop it. So you have to assume that maybe they've redone their warp drive so it won't have the same kind of damage. I don't know.
Did they not mention it at some point that they've done their technological magic?
It's never specifically mentioned on screen that they've done anything about this. They just stopped mentioning it. I mean, people speculated that for like Voyager, how when it's a impulse or whatever, the warp nacelles are flat and then it kind of goes up, that may have been a way to deal with it. But it's never been explained on screen, I don't think.
Put your warp coils at an angle. That does. And doesn't do any damage.
It would affect the warp field geometry or something like that. But anyway, it's Intrepid class. But
you don't even have to mention that. That's a given. Everybody knows that the warp field geometry would be affected.
I mean, of course, right? I mean,
Justin. Sheesh.
But yeah, it's kind of an interesting idea. And I think that you've seen in other parts of Star Trek where they talk about, a society being affected by like overpopulation or other kinds of damage. But this is an interesting one because it's a damage to like space or subspace itself, which is kind of an interesting idea going beyond just like a rift or an anomaly. But like, hey, there's some big problem with what we've been using and what we've been doing. We have to change.
And I think that's where the analogy with kind of humans living on Earth now lies. That we have to change what we're doing. Otherwise, we're going to destroy the only home that we have.
Yeah, and at a certain point, a greenhouse effect can get to be a runaway, where it just kind of, the cycle kind of feeds on itself, like what happened on Venus, which is way too hot to visit.
Yeah, and they've got sulfuric acid clouds on Venus, so that was,
You can just melt metal and the pressure is enough to crush you pretty quickly, so don't want that kind of stuff to happen.
It's no riser. It's our Venus.
No.
So, will we move on to our next episode, which is Inheritance. Amy?
All right. Well, we have Data meeting Juliana Tainer, former wife of Dr. Noonien Soong and Data's, quote, mother. But she holds a shocking secret that even she doesn't know she carries.
Oh my God, a shocking secret. What is it? What's the secret? I don't remember. No.
I think that Juliana Tainer might be a Soong type android, but just really, really, really advanced. Like super Mark advanced. V. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have, on the request of many fans, I've started Battlestar Galactica. So this whole idea of robots and having robots programmed that they don't know that they are a robot sort of fits into this because, you know, Juliana, she doesn't know what she is. She really thinks that she's a human. And it's so interesting to take that next leap of, you know, what was one of the three criteria? It's like, are you self-aware? You know, so if she self-aware, she doesn't know she's a robot. So she's not sentient, right? That's my question to you.
I'm interested, Joe. You put on the outline robot, but why are we not saying android?
Well, because we don't have androids at the moment. We have robots.
Oh, okay. So and more so of it's an like analogy. Okay.
Oh, in 2019.
Yeah.
Yes, our current understanding of science. I've kind of added to that and said, okay, let's talk about robots, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of robots, we have lots and lots and lots of robots at the moment around the world. Silly toys that children can interact with to the robots that Boston Dynamics are creating that are super agile. They can be used, you can give them a parcel. You've seen YouTube videos. You can give them a parcel and you can put obstacles in their way and they'll be able to like gymnasts, like stand on one foot while you kick the box that they're standing on away from them and they'll be able to hold their balance. There's a whole science, kinematics of robot movement, which is really difficult to do. To get robots to stand up and walk. And I was walking yesterday and thinking, how am I walking? What actions am I taking?
Don't think about it too much or you might trip and fall. Well, because it's so automatic, right?
I was thinking, came to the conclusion that walking is just controlled falling. And that when you want to walk forward, you change your center of gravity and you push your upper body forward. So you start to fall, but then you bend your knee, move your leg out so that your foot catches you from falling.
That's really interesting that you say that, Joe, because basically when something is orbiting like a planet or a moon, it's kind of controlled falling as well. Like you fall a little bit, but then you have something that keeps you moving like horizontally and you fall and like the whole time around. So
yeah, it's kind of Newton's thought experiment. Before they had satellites, Newton was thinking, if I had a cannon and you fire the cannon, it's going to follow a projectile path and hit the Earth some distance away. But if you keep on increasing the power of the cannon, say you gave it an infinite force, the cannon will go in a straight line forever. Okay, and there's going to be some power that the cannon has somewhere in between infinity and zero where it doesn't ever hit the ground. It doesn't shoot off in a straight line. It doesn't hit the ground. It will go in an orbit, which gave rise to orbital mechanics. And then I think it was Kepler that came up with the equations that govern planetary orbits.
Right, yeah.
What is it? The period of the orbit squared is proportional to the radius cubed.
Something like that. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Me too, yeah. Sorry if it's wrong. NASA have used robots for exploration for decades now, like the Curiosity rover on Mars, things that can be automated to a point where they'll go around and gather samples, and their onboard experiments will be able to analyze the samples for certain chemical signatures, looking for liquid water on Mars, looking for organic compounds and things that might in future give rise to indications of life on Mars. And then we have a whole other aspect of robotics where we have social robots, and robots increasingly being used to be companions to kind of maybe older people or people with Alzheimer's or dementia. Never mind that other type of robot that we can't really talk about.
Let's just say that it could potentially be used for many activities humans engage in. So
I was thinking robots are kind of useful. Like companion robots would be useful to me because they would constantly remind me to do stuff that I'm supposed to be doing and stop me procrastinating.
And if we can't get clones, maybe a robot could do what you were thinking your clone could do and could, like, you know, do your job and all the chores around the house, and you could just kick back and immerse yourself in a VR wonderland.
That's true. I'd end up like seriously morbidly obese because the robot would be doing everything and I'd be like lying like in a
Wall-E.
A VR coma.
Yes, like Wall-E.
A couple of Disney movies have been popped in, like The Big Hero, and now you're talking Wall-E. And now we're getting to the
Big Hero
of,
6.
Yeah.
Oh,
because he's
I love
a companion robot, you know.
And yeah. He is, yes. Yeah.
But, you know, then it's like, okay, you're creating this robot to do all of your menial, and then are we getting closer to Measure of a Man? What if we could just create?
That's the question that I have for you, Joe. So we have robots that can do these tasks. I mean, they'll probably get more and more sophisticated over time. Do you think we'll ever get to a point where it will be something like Data, where there's a question like, is this a sentient being? Does it have its own rights? Do you think we'll ever get there?
I don't see why not. Humans like to create things and improve upon technology.
But like, here's the thing, like, where is the dividing line between not being conscious and being conscious, or not being sentient and being sentient? Like, how do you know even how to get there if we don't even completely understand what consciousness is? Or what sentience really is, you know?
If we don't know how to define something, then we don't know how to define it for anything.
Okay, I guess here's my question.
Biological or if, artificial.
If like a robot keeps getting more and more and more sophisticated over time, will there inevitably come a point where it achieves consciousness or sentience? Or is that something you have to specifically like think for and plan for and try to do?
I can't answer that without knowing what consciousness is. Right? We don't know where your consciousness is encoded in your brain, if it is at all, or if it's just a byproduct of the complexity of the human brain.
Hmm.
I think there will need to be three things. So robotics has to get more advanced for a start to make a robot look and be able to act like a human. Then we need, in order to do all the things humans do, probably need some kind of quantum computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have quantum computers just now.
Yeah.
Well, we have some prototypes, and they can do the normal operations of a normal computer, albeit a lot faster. But there's an idea out there that quantum computers will be able to do things not just faster, but do things that normal computers won't be able to do.
Yeah.
And then we need artificial intelligence.
I mean, we have artificial intelligence, but we need it maybe more sophisticated, right?
Well, I don't know that we do have artificial intelligence.
No, okay, it depends on how you define it, but there are things where artificial intelligence is used where you set up something for a specific task, but you set it up so that it can learn by itself from what it's doing and kind of get smarter and more sophisticated by itself. That's how artificial, and that's being used like right now in a lot of different applications, but it's not conscious or anything.
No, but would artificial intelligence be conscious? I think there's a difference between what we use just now, like machine learning, where we have really sophisticated algorithms that can help us in our everyday life. For example, my new Apple Watch, when I'm out walking the dogs, it'll tap me on the wrist saying, oh, it looks like you're out walking. Do you want me to record it for your fitness app? And I'm like, sure. When I get into my car in the morning, my phone recognizes the pattern of my daily life. So if it's a weekday and I'm getting into the car about 7 a.m., my phone recognizes that I'm going to work. So it says, oh, it's an hour and 15 minutes to work. Here are the directions. So it's It's not artificial intelligence, but it's just a series of really clever algorithms.
So I was curious. So I looked up what the definition of artificial intelligence is. Do you want to know what that is?
Yes, please.
Okay. So theory and development of computer systems able to perform tasks that normally require human intelligence, such as visual perception, speech recognition, decision-making, and translation between languages. We already have some things that do some of those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
do we have something that does all of those things? I think that's the question.
I think that the part about visual perception and maybe more advanced decision making we don't have yet, but we definitely have speech recognition and translation between languages, right?
Well, and we're getting now like those cars that will parallel park, and they're testing, you know, that they can travel from point A to B, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Self-driving cars, yeah. There was an article I read earlier about Olympic judges being replaced with kind of, let's call it, artificially intelligent judges. So like for gymnastics, where there's very specific movements required and they happen very quickly, an artificially intelligent judge will be able to see everything from multiple angles.
Here's the thing about that, though, because I think there's two things that go into that kind of judging. One of them is the technical perfection or the technical ability, but the other is the artistic expression of it. And I don't think we're yet at a place where artificial intelligence could judge that, right?
Which is why you would still need human judges, yeah.
Yeah, because they can be technically good and accurate, but, you know, one person may have more passion that...
Yeah, that inspires you or something.
Is not a technical skill, right?
Right, yeah.
If it was a gymnastics routine was like 100% like technically accurate, but I had no flair or passion, it'd be like Data playing the violin. Right.
I was just thinking about Data playing the violin.
Aesthetic.
I'm like, well, here's the test. Like, is it something that you could say, well, logically this is flawless, or that a Vulcan in a compromised state like Sarek would cry at? Because then you're getting somewhere. Mm. But
true.
But yeah, it is an interesting question. Like because I think at the point that you could get some kind of artificial intelligence to understand on its own what makes for artistic expression and inspiration, and kind of in a way feel those things itself, I think you're there as far as some sort of consciousness or sentience or self-awareness. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're mimicking what that would be. That's the hard question. But I think that like in our lifetimes, we're going to see these things progress more and a lot of more of these questions asked, right?
Yeah, true. Well, recently Google published a report, but then quickly deleted it, that they have a prototype quantum computer.
I saw that.
Performed a really complicated calculation, and it would take our most advanced supercomputer, like normal kind of semiconductor computer, over 10,000 years to kind of process. And it took Google's quantum computer 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
I wonder why they deleted it. Was it just like, whoa, that's not right? Or was it like the world's not ready for that? Because that's actually kind of a dangerous thing, because a lot of our world functions on secure communications that can't be broken by computers, at least like within a reasonable period of time. But quantum computers have the possible ability to crack those like very quickly, and to need a completely different set of secure connections that are based on quantum mechanics. Anyway, which is a whole interesting thing. So,
Like anything, like hackers will try and circumvent security, and the security industry gets better at securing data. And it's this constant race to kind of beat the hackers. So with the advent of quantum computers, there will be a whole section on quantum security and encryption.
Yeah.
Which will be a new science in itself, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody's brain tired yet?
No, I'm invigorated. But like whenever we have these discussions about science and things that we have now and what's coming, it just makes me think like, wow, we're going to see some incredible things and some really difficult challenges we've never had to deal with before, like in our lifetimes.
It's when, like talking about climate change, it's when like we get proper artificial intelligence that's kind of self-aware, and it's like we feed it the problem of, oh, what do we do? How do we fix the planet?
I know what you're going to say.
Like, sea levels have risen 70 meters, like everybody's getting washed away and Las Vegas is like a million degrees. And it goes, okay, give me access to the planet and I'll be able to fix it for you. And then it just launches all the nuclear weapons and wipes out the humans.
I was going to say, goes, like, humans are the problem. Sorted. Solution, exterminate the humans.
Right?
Yes, exactly. I know it's a common trope of science fiction that we are the problem. So how do you fix it?
I'd like to think that that wouldn't happen, that it would be more like, okay, you know, let me see what I can do to provide a service to the people that created me. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't happen that way. I'd hope so.
So there was a robot, and it's from a few years ago. I think I might have mentioned it before in an episode. It was an example of an almost artificially intelligent robot, and at the face of, it was a famous author, was it Ray Bradbury or somebody like that, and it was being interviewed.
I'm sorry, a robot with the face of Ray Bradbury?
Well, they had, it was like one of these human simulation robots.
Oh, okay.
And they'd given it a face that looked like, it was a famous sci-fi author, I think. It was Ray Bradbury, and they asked it the question, in the future of artificial intelligence, it was something like, what will you do with the humans? And it was like, oh, humans are my friends. I will like the humans. Humans created me. I will keep you in my human zoo. It was like super creepy. And like, artificial intelligence has a history
of saying
really creepy, ominous things. Just the fact that, I will look after you and keep you in my human zoo.
Yeah,
if it was a human saying that, they'd be a psychopath, wouldn't they? But
yeah,
no, it was a computer that came up with that phrase.
That's the whole thing, like the kind of logical series of like deductions or reasoning, where it's like, the robot might be like, I care about humans a lot. I want to take care of them. I'll put them in a zoo, right? Whereas a person who's not a psychopath would be like, I like humans. I care about them a lot. Let me see what I can find out about the biggest problem and help them solve that, right? Like, because naturally we take into account, like, okay, let's see what the problem is. Let's see how people are hurting or what we can do about that. And you're saying, like, at least in this form, this robot isn't even thinking about that. It's just like, well, I don't care what they think about. Well, you know, they'll be fine in a zoo. So that's really interesting.
True.
Yeah.
So I've just Googled it again. It was modeled after Philip K. Dick.
Oh, okay.
Who's the novelist that inspired Blade Runner, and the question they asked it. So they interviewed it. It was a PBS interview in 2011.
Yeah.
And they asked will robots take over the world? And the robot said, geez, dude, you all have the big questions cooking today, but you're my friend, and I'll remember my friends, and I'll be good to you. So don't worry, even if I evolve into Terminator, I'll still be nice to you. I'll keep you warm and safe in my people zoo, where I can watch you for old time's sake.
Are you making that up? Is that actually what it said?
I'm reading the actual quote. Yeah, and all these little human kind of nuances to it. Like for old time's sakes.
Yeah.
O-L apostrophe.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, it's like, it's a bit ominous. Like, where's the off switch?
Okay, I wish I could...
burn it with fire.
I wish I could find this now, but I think someone used artificial intelligence and they fed in, like, all of the scripts from all of the TNG episodes, and they had it write a new TNG episode, and it was hilarious because it made, like, no sense whatsoever. Have you seen that?
Never heard of
it. I've seen examples of where they feed it kind of other franchises scripts and come out with a new version, and they're all a bit zany and wacky.
Yeah, okay, so I think I found it, because this just happened like last year but an artificial intelligence bot like tried to write an episode of TNG, and it was so hilarious. Do you want me to read you part of it?
Yes, please.
Okay. So episode 270, I don't know where they get these numbers from. Episode 279, here's looking at Q. Opening shot, the heavily damaged Enterprise in orbit around a family restaurant. So already it's totally surreal, right? Okay. And then you have Picard. Captain's log, stardate 48213.7. We have been involved in a damp and terrible battle. However, today is my first birthday in space, so I'm going to have an elaborate cat food dinner with my friend Worf. I mean, it's just like this insane stuff that no like human writer would ever write. Like, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it like you read it and it just gets progressively more insane. So yeah, there's a long way to go before they'll write episodes, let alone hopefully like determine things related to our existence. Yeah.
But when they get it right, it'll be really easy just to say.
I'm sorry, I kept reading it. I shouldn't have done that. Because it's so. Let me give you the next part. I'm sorry, because it's
okay. Okay, go for it.
So, dining room of family restaurant. Picard says, "Mr. Worf, I appreciate this present of clothes for my birthday." sorry, but. But as I am a boy, I need me my toys. And then Worf replies, "You have disgraced my father with your words." Okay, I'm done for this episode.
Oh my gosh.
It's so insane, and I love things that are insane like that. Anyway, I'll have to send you guys
a link to this. You have to send us the link. Yes. Please do, yes.
I think I've totally derailed the episode. I'm sorry. But,
oh my gosh, listeners, Justin is literally crying with the, we need the emoji with the tears coming out the eyes. This is Justin.
And with the head that slanted sideways because it's laughing so much.
Yes.
I'm going to put it in the chat here, guys, because, oh my God. Anyway, sorry, we were talking about, what were we talking about? Were we still talking about robots?
robots, AI, quantum computing. Uh-huh. I think we're kind of done with that conversation now. I think we've exhausted it.
I think we're done for the episode because I can't take anything seriously right now and I need a minute.
But good discussion. Like, I love, you know, talking about the science. And Joe, I love that you bring it up. Justin.
I need to stop reading it. I'm sorry.
I'm closing, doing my final thoughts. Close the window, Justin. And you're all laughing over me.
Joe, you need to keep all of this in.
This is an intervention, Justin.
Okay.
Close the window.
Oh my gosh.
It's closed. It's closed. My face hurts.
Oh my gosh. I've never seen Justin like this before.
It's
guys.
Rare that I get like this, but when I do,
I know. I love it.
I think he's having a humor seizure.
I think I am. No, but I'm serious. When I laugh so much that I cry, like it hurts at like the back of my face and in my skull, and that's what's happening. So deep breaths.
This is like on Generations when Data can't control his emotions and he's laughing at every joke that he's told for the past 7-8 years.
Okay.
Space. What is the point of it? You have no idea. This is the Enterprise, a big circle with a porch. I'm the Captain Picard. Come with me.
Are you making this up now?
Don't.
You are.
He's no. reading.
Don't tell me what to eat, Lieutenant, says Riker. Making a mess is not a crime, but what if it was? That's Picard. Data says, is that a human metaphor? And would you please stop speaking with human feelings? Riker, it's the Borg. I do not believe that is correct.
You told me to close the window, and so you open it and start reading.
I know, now Joe's going off rails. Listeners, what am I going to do?
You said to send the link, and I did. Wow. Let's keep going, because you guys do...
I'm professional enough to read it and lose all composure.
It's because you have no sense of humor, apparently. But, oh, my God. No, really.
I'm like, deeply offended. Let's My sense of humor is nuanced.
Yes, and you'll keep us in your human zoo. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, we appreciate that.
Not you, Justin. You're not getting in the zoo.
Too much laughing. I'm disqualified.
Too much laughing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Keep going. I will come. I will. When I can come back in, I'll give you a thumbs up, but you guys do everything until that point.
So, Joe, can I continue my final thought?
Please, please do. With gravitas and seriousness.
Yes, please.
So, no, I really do enjoy these science episodes, and we hit on some great topics, obviously not just for entertainment like the VR, but the, you know, medical uses and, you know, talking about climate change and what it was back then in the 90s versus what it is now. I love that comparison to see. I mean, it's been 30 years and we're still dealing with the same type of issues. And I just think so much to learn from Next Gen, and grateful that they have these scripts in there that we can have these discussions. So thank you, Joe.
Well, thank you, Amy. Yeah, I'd really enjoy doing this too. And science is easy because science is my language. So I really enjoy watching TNG episodes and thinking about what is the impact of that in terms of science, or what does modern day science tell us about the science of the episode. So it's good fun. Justin, are you back with us?
I don't know if I am yet. Go ahead. I'm getting totally serious.
You know, next week...
Final thoughts. You don't want to
We're going to come back to your final thoughts until you gather
so
your
So join
composure.
Us next week for another cup of Justin's craziness.
You're making it worse.
I know.
I don't know how it can get worse.
Okay. I'll give you simple final thoughts that I can get through. It's been great having this discussion, getting into all the implications of all of the future stuff. I can't even talk right now. But really, like every time we do these episodes, Joe, it goes into such interesting directions because you prepare this and you say, here are the episodes and what we're going to talk about. I actually don't do any preparation because I figure you're going to lead us in the directions and tell us about, the scientific articles and how you're thinking about it. And we can get into some really like profound thoughts about things that are dangers to our planet and things that we really need to think about where we might create sentient beings in the future. So I think it's really great when you bring this to us and when you can make me laugh like an idiot. It's, a special bonus maybe. I don't know if you guys think it's a bonus right now.
You made you laugh like an idiot. Nothing to do with Amy.
That is true.
You started talking about robots and that naturally led to the insane
naturally.
TNG script, right? It was a logical progression.
Is this a serious thing? We have to be careful.
Yeah.
We do.
I may actually send one of my sentient robots to come and get you.
You have sentient
robots? And remove
robots?
The humor centers of your brain. Yes.
Okay.
That's one of the dark things you don't know about me.
There are many dark things apparently we don't know about you. At least the things you fantasize fictionally about. So.
True. Mm-hmm. And I will leave you thinking about which ones of them are true. Anyways, Justin, you have a preview of next week's episode. Please do it without smiling.
It's serious. Well, I can't guarantee not smiling because I'm happy about it, but I won't like lose it and laugh too much. All right. So listeners, we're excited that next week we're going to bring you an interview, and it's with Jennifer Gotti, and she played Baal in the Birthright two-parter, so she was the... half Romulan, half Klingon in those episodes. And she also played Libby in the Voyager episode Non Sequitur. So I think we're going to have a great time talking to her. I met her at Star Trek Las Vegas. She was very nice and agreed for an interview. So we'll be happy to bring that to you.
I randomly watched Non Sequitur last night and I realized, I was like, that's Jennifer Gatti. Yeah. And we're interviewing her next week.
That's right. Yeah. And she plays Libby. Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah. Well, it's been so much fun talking about more science in TNG, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here in the network. Here is what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Okay, that's excellent. And it'll be interesting to see how we interpreted the topic, because I know I may have interpreted it maybe a little differently than others did. We'll see.
Is this another time travel thing?
No, I was going to say, no time travel for me, as long as... Jellicoe doesn't come into this.
Sure. Okay. We'll make that deal then. Awesome. I'm in.
All right.
Literary treks.
And, the stakes are really big. We'll get there, but, this Borg ship threatens Earth and all this kind of stuff. And it just feels like it's a lot of really comic booky, over the top stuff that doesn't quite fit right with the novel that came before it and the novel that came after it, if that makes sense.
Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
And Next Gen arriving was this sort of, wow, this looks incredible. I know when we look at sort of first season Next Gen now, what we're going is, wow, this is really slow and stagey. But in fact, it was incredible. It was absolutely game-changing.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Only because I was watching little bits of Emissary recently, is that he would see himself wearing that awful purple swimsuit and think, oh God, I can't wear that.
Oh my my gosh.
Every time I see it, I'm like, whoa, I'm really glad I'm not wearing 24th century clothing.
If you wanted me to murder an entire society, fine. But I'm not wearing that bathing suit.
Too revealing.
That's where I draw the line.
That's funny.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show, and we will read it on air.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm.
So Amy, where can people contact you when you're not telling me to stop being so crazy about my laughter?
Well... Oh, goodness, Justin. That's too funny. Well, you can find me here on the network where I'm hosting The Edge with Patrick Devlin. And you can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. But my favorite place is right there in the Babel Conference. So, Joe, where can people contact you when you aren't warp speeding through space?
When I'm not warp speeding through space. They can contact me when I am warp speeding through space in exactly the same manner as they would when I'm not warping through space, because like my warping through space vessel has communication abilities.
Wait, you're subspace warping through channels. Space vessel? It doesn't have a name?
Yeah. It does have a name.
Mm-hmm. And it is?
Warping through a space vessel.
Okay. I was going to say the USS Joe 9 billion clone. No, that doesn't work. 9 billion Borg.
It'd be a really big ship. No. Anyway, wherever I am and whatever I'm doing, you can contact me on Twitter at joeyjoe77uk. You can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com, or you can find me in the Babel Conference. Justin, where can people contact you when you're not designing your environmental suit for when El Paso gets too warm?
It's already pretty warm in the summer, but we do need to work on that environmental suit for sure. Did we talk about before the something that could generate like a bubble around you that's air conditioned? That would be really cool.
Yes,
for that,
we did.
Right?
We did, yes.
Well, when I'm not thinking about that, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting The Line. That's our Star Trek Picard podcast with my friends Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shea Matala. We're talking about lots of Picard stuff. We recently had an episode where we talked about the trailer that was released at New York Comic Con. We also recently had an interview with director Hanalei Culpepper, who's directing the first two episodes of Picard. And we've been talking about various things related to The Next Generation as well. In the run-up to that show that we now know is going to come out on January 23rd, and also a short trek on January 9th, so we'll be covering all that stuff as it comes out. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, and you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
So I know it's later than usual, but you want a bonus question? I know Joe lives for
no,
this.
No, thank you.
You don't?
No.
No?
He's kidding. Yes, we do.
Yeah, okay.
Hashtag still listening.
So you have to, yeah, you have to answer this because you saw me go crazy with laughter and kind of lose control earlier. Mm-hmm. Tell me about a moment in your life when that's happened and why. Or has it happened?
So losing control laughing happened a lot in high school. I had some dear, dear friends and we were just thick as thieves. And we went to the mall. I think it was Saturday, you know, because that's what you did in the early 90s, hang out at the mall. And I don't even know what we were talking about, but we went to the Orange Julius stand and we were, you know, drinking our Orange Julius and my friends just busted up. I had this big, you know, took a big drink of my Orange Julius and it came out through my nose.
Oh my God.
It was so, and like my friend, so like I'm leaning over with Orange Julius spewing out of my nose and my friends like flies just, they fly away and leave me there. And I'm like, hello, can I get some napkins? And they all left me high and dry.
Oh my God. Just,
I will never let them live that down.
Wait, but that caused you to laugh and lose control?
Well, I don't know what, we were just laughing and
Oh, I see. So you were laughing at something, but you had just drank something and it came out your nose. Oh my God.
Yes, that is the one uncontrollable laughter moment that comes to mind.
Yeah, it's a good thing I didn't have anything that could do that out my nose. Wow, what an experience. You're going to have to top that, Joe.
I don't think I can. I think I have lots of examples, and it's usually either me and my sister or me and my friend Kate. And it's usually nothing that you would find funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's just us being silly and something kind of tickles your brain in a certain way. And it just becomes the most hilarious thing ever. And you take it to a point where invariably I can't speak for laughing, feeling like I'm going to rupture some internal organs because it's excruciatingly painful when you laugh that much. It's like a proper belly laugh and there's tears streaming down your face.
Yes.
And when you think, if I were to be able to remember an instance of why we were laughing or what was funny, it wouldn't be funny.
Yeah, exactly. And then just laughing because you're laughing and...
Laughing, yes. And then one person laughs and it's like when people yawn. Like one person yawn, like everybody in the room will yawn. Same with people laughing. Laughing
except
makes other people laugh.
On this episode, because I don't think you guys were laughing as much. Shame.
No.
We had to be in the same room. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Well, that was really interesting to find out about you guys. We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Trabuzio, Joe Keegan, Jim McMahon, and me, Justin Ozer. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
I'm going to have an elaborate cat dinner with my friend Worf.
Thou shalt not make a machine in the likeness of a human mind.